Good morning. It's Tuesday, August the 3rd, 8:58 a.m. In the year 2017 of the current era. I wonder what the current era will be called when it is no longer the current era. It's cold. Well, no, it's not cold. It's cool. It's a little bit chilly. I'm wearing an extra shirt today because even though I'm out later, almost 9 o'clock. Oh, shoot, that reminds me. I have an alarm. It's going to go off. What time did I say? 8:28. I think I said 8:58. I do have an alarm. It's going to go off, but it's not going to go off in 2 minutes. It's going to go off in half an hour. So, theoretically, I will be back before the alarm goes off, but just in case I trip and break a leg or something. It feels like I am just hiking through molasses this morning. I don't quite know what the story is. I can't get up any momentum. I don't feel like I'm moving along. I feel like I'm just crawling. Part of it was that it was a very rough night. We had a lot of thunder showers go through here last night. A lot of rain. Thunder woke me up several times over the course of the night, so I'm not looking and feeling my best here this morning. I've had my first breakfast. I'm looking forward to my second breakfast, which will happen just about the time I get home. I'm looking forward to actually settling in with Natalia and Zoya. Do a little writing here this morning. I'm late. I've got to do a bunch of stuff today. Gosh, I forgot all about this. So yeah, maybe I'm not going to settle in. I've got to write a blog post for the Rockland Fiction Writers for a week from Friday, but I have to get it done early so that they can run it past the editors and get it approved. They seem to like my stuff, so okay, fine. I also need to update my blog. I didn't put a blog update on August 1st like I should have, and I didn't catch up with it yesterday. It's on my list of things to do, but I didn't do it either of those 2 days. I don't know why I've missed it. I don't know why I've been dragging my feet. I don't have a lot to report. That's one of the problems. I don't have a lot to say about the work in progress. Last weekend's Novelrama event, which should have seen 27,000 new words, saw like 4,000, not 4 words. Yesterday might have been 4 words, but there's a couple of things on my mind this morning. One is the nutty. Talked about this idea of identity in a comment on the Dog Days podcast Facebook page, and Identity is one of those interesting ideas. It's one of those interesting concepts. And in a certain sense, it's a construct. And I was riffing off my comments yesterday about, does what you do define who you are? Does what you do define you? And as, you know, this, in a certain sense, yes, it does, but in another sense, it doesn't. It's not the only thing that defines you. At least, it's not the only thing that defines me. Now, I back this up a little bit. All right, now that was a big dog. Just judging from the poop that didn't get picked up, that was a huge dog. Anyway, and this is usually a good neighborhood. You don't usually see dog poop laying around. That looked like about 4 pounds. But I digress. Seriously digress. Sorry about that. So identity is one of those odd concepts. And it's one of the things that I struggled with. And more or less unconsciously, until very recently, more or less unconsciously, about my own identity. Who am I? What am I? And one of the thing that's sort of brought it out has been my latest therapist, who's, we spent some time, let's see, a year ago, a year and a half ago. And I was really struggling with depression. I was really struggling with a lot of issues. And it's depression, chronic depression is one of those things where it's not that you're unhappy, it's that you just don't care. And nothing is, everything is gray, everything is not. That's a, one of the challenges in writing the last H.M.O. Wong story was his state of depression made everything gray. Literally, in his case, because he was living in a gray box, but it also colored everything that he did, all of his interactions. Everything that he did in that book was gray. And so it didn't have the same kind of spark that some of his, the other stories of his have, because he didn't have the spark himself. And that was really what I was trying to get at. So I think I did a really good job, because some readers are really complaining about, well, he doesn't seem like himself. Really? Thank you. That's a great observation. And clearly I did what I wanted to do. Fortunately, I don't think I did well enough to really make it look like I was doing it on purpose rather than by accident, by leaving things out inadvertently instead of on purpose. So one of the things, I guess it was like 2 years ago, not that it matters. So you wait till you get to the cancer section and then put on your blinker light. Don't fuck. Sorry. I try not to swear on the podcast. I try not to drop F-bombs and stuff, but every once in a while they slip out. So we were going through this idea of identity and the way family of origin shapes your identity in ways that sometimes you're not even aware of, because it inculcates a set of values that, because they're largely there always, they've always been there, they're part of you, you tend not to question them. You tend not to look at them very carefully. You tend to sort of accept them. Even when they get in your way, you sort of accept them and figure, well, there must be something I'm doing wrong, because it just doesn't work out the way it's supposed to. So I come from blue-collar, rural, poor, where the big push for me to get good grades was to be able to go to school and get a degree that would allow me to get a good job so that I wouldn't wind up doing manual labor. The idea that I might go to a journalism school, that was not going to happen. The idea that I might go to a liberal arts school, that was not going to happen. I needed something like engineering. I needed something like, I couldn't go and study math. I had to go and study engineering. I couldn't go and study science. I had to go and study something that I could apply, something I could get a job for. So pretty much my whole life prior to going into the Coast Guard, say it with me, Monk Post, was how do I prepare to get a job and support myself, and perhaps later on a family. And the family of origin valued hard work and honesty. They valued production. Are you making anything? Are you doing something? And by doing something, it means doing something, making something, engaged in a visible effort. And so in my formative years, when I worked on the factory line, filling bottles of salad dressing and cans of ice cream toppings, you had to be busy, you had to be doing something because you were being paid by the hour, and they wanted their hour's worth of labor for their hour's worth of pay. And that was my training. That was part of my being. And even when I shifted over from blue collar to military was, you gotta look busy, idle hands, gotta keep the crew moving. And then from the military, I went into bookstore management. And management was pretty much the same way. They liked my work ethic because I was always busy doing something. And quite often what I was doing was not really all that useful. But I got very good at doing things, because doing something was much better than doing nothing. And by doing, I mean actually doing, not thinking about doing, not planning doing, but doing. And then I went into management. I went into information systems. I went into managing information systems. I went into managing people who were actually writing the code, instead of being the one who wrote the code himself. And so that was a little more challenging, because I wasn't doing something. The people who worked for me were doing something. And so I tended to research and do the kinds of things that I thought I needed to do in order to understand what was going on in my industry, which is information services. And I understood pretty well, I think. I was doing a pretty good job. Until we got bought out by a larger company, and those people were incredibly stupid. Luckily, they fired me. They discovered that I was too well connected to the environment, to the business, so that when they tried to do things like tell us on one hand that they weren't going to change anything, and on the other hand they were buying new equipment to put in place of equipment that we had, it was pretty clear when I called them on it that they couldn't afford to have me around because I kept pointing to where they were lying to us. And they didn't like that. So they fired me, which was good in a way, because I had to find something else to do. I got to get a new job. I found a new job. I continued in my career. I had to be doing something. And then I went into education. And everything changed. I went into higher ed. I went into university. I went into, for a while, it was a corporate training. Corporate training was kind of amusing. It really underscored a lot of flaws in most educational systems, which set me up to be a master student, a graduate student in educational technology quite well, because I was coming from the technology side and all of these educators telling me what technology couldn't do, and then I turn around to do it and show them, well, yeah, actually you can do it. It's just that you have to do it. The first thing you have to get over is the fact that you believe you can't do it when, in fact, actually you can. The only question is, do you know how? And the answer was, well, no, not really. And since they didn't know how to do it, then they figured it couldn't be done. An important lesson. That theme might come back. I think about it, Jenna, because you don't know how to do it doesn't mean it can't be done. Then I became an artist. Then I became an author. Then I started writing. Seriously writing. I've always written. I started writing in junior high, what we would call middle school today. So I've always written. Some years I didn't write as much. Some years I wrote a lot. But a large part of writing, well, a certain portion of it has to happen in front of a keyboard. It has to happen in front of a blank page, either a virtual page or a physical page or some kind of page which you are going to then fill. Ideally with deathless prose, but at least with prose so that you can then edit it and maybe make it a little less moribund. If not actually deathless. But a lot of what happens for me in writing happens long before I sit down at the page. It happens long before I'm actually got my fingers on the keys. It happens while I'm walking like this, when I'm thinking about the story, when I'm thinking about what I want to write, when I'm thinking about the characters. It happens when I'm driving. When probably should be paying closer attention to the road. But my head is spinning things in my brain. And so those family of origin things, those family of origin values, the hard work, the piecework sort of mentality, you've got to produce something. You've got to make 7 widgets today. You've got to make 5,000 words today, or you're not really working. It doesn't really work for me as an artist. It doesn't really work for me as a writer. Yes, I need to have words on a page. There's this sort of dilemma that I need to have words on the page so I can edit them into the story, but I need to have enough of it in my brain to put onto the page. And so reconciling those family of origin values with the values that I need to foster while I'm an artist instead of a machinist, instead of a data entry clerk who gets graded on how many errors per keystroke. Who gets judged. I made a comment the other day to somebody writer's production is not measured in words, it's measured in stories. And the more I think about that, the more I think it's true. Because there's so much that goes into a story that isn't just sitting down and ripping it off, typing in a bunch of words onto a page. Because before you could do that, you have to have a story. And you can't get the story unless you think about it. And thinking isn't really doing anything, is it? Anyway, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. And with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.